You're listening to Turkish Football Weekly, available on the World Football Daily Club podcast feed. If you're a member of World Football Daily, you can go to the site and stream the show anytime to your computer, mobile phone, or tablet without having to download or sync anything. If you're not a member of World Football Daily, just search World Football Daily Club podcast in the iTunes store and download the World Football Daily Club podcast feed for free. Enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Turkish Football Weekly for the week of October 24th, 2013. My name is Atta Dizdar, and returning to the podcast this week is Jeremy Chapman. Jeremy, how was your week?
Yeah, thanks. My week was great. I was in sunny Florida. I guess the rest of the U.S., or most of it, got cold all of a sudden, but I wasn't very cold. So that was nice. And I missed being on the show, but I did listen to you and Khan. I thought it was a nice episode. I didn't think it was too long-winded. I don't know. I sort of got lost in it. I kind of enjoyed it quite a bit. Good stuff from you guys. And, well, how was your week?
It got cold here all of a sudden, so I am, bundling up a bit. And I think we're getting a freeze warning as of tonight, but... let's go to the Turkish Super League Week 8 results. Start off with Saturday's matches. Eskişehirspor on the road beats Elazığspor 2-0. Kasımpaşa beats Gençlerbirliği 3-1 in Ankara. And Galatasaray at home beats Karabükspor 2-1. Alfred Ndiaye on a penalty kick in the 45th minute and Cristobal Jorquera in the 48th minute with the goals for Eskişehirspor there. Gençlerbirliği, man, do they... ever suck. I mean, at this point, I mean, it's not looking too good for them as they lose 3-1 to Kasımpaşa. Ahmet Yılmaz Çalık scoring the goal for Gençlerbirliği to get the scoring started there, but three straight goals for Kasımpaşa by Tabar Viudas in the 15th minute, Oster Skarione in the 28th minute, and Ryan Babel in the 39th minute sealed the deal there for Kasımpaşa. Gençlerbirliği losing their fourth straight match. And as for the Galatasaray Karabükspor match, Wesley Sneijder was the star of the game as he scores both goals for Galatasaray. Joseph Akpala in the 52nd minute ends a 414-minute scoreless drought. I think you had pointed that out to me on Twitter as the game was going on. Roberto Mancini getting his first win in any competition as Galatasaray manager. And Sebastian Pellegrini getting a direct red card in the 55th minute. It seemed as though Burak Yılmaz had a goal-scoring opportunity, and Pellegrini pulled him down and got the direct red card out of it. It was looking good for Karabükspor up until that point, but it just seemed to me like maybe Galatasaray still has some work to do, but I think it's still the adjustment period in terms of having Roberto Mancini as the manager. And Wesley Sneijder's second goal in the 83rd minute, I mean, it was just a terrific goal, long-range shot. I think it went off the crossbar and in, but, you know, it's still a candidate for a Goal of the Week award if we had one.
Definitely, yeah, you're right. That thing did kind of knock in off the crossbar. It was absolutely beautiful. Of course, Wesley Sneijder was the guy who got that second goal for the Netherlands, pretty much burying the Turks' hopes for getting to the World Cup, a goal which he didn't celebrate in that national team game. But he really came out and celebrated these goals. I think if he lost any favor with some of the Turkish fans, then he won it back right there. I mean, obviously you've got to do your duty, and if that means, you know, burying the hopes of your of your club's fans' national team, then that's what you got to do. But he really celebrated, and rightfully so. Of course, Karabük finally getting a goal. Of course, not enough in this case. Nice to see Mancini get his first win for Galatasaray, but Karabükspor not the biggest challenge. But of course, Galatasaray needs every win they can get these days. With Elazığspor and Eskişehirspor, I mean, Elazığspor has now lost four straight. And, you know, for a team that got off to, you know, a decent start this season, they've really kind of squandered it. I mean, their first four games, they had two wins and a draw, and now they've just been on a bit of a skid. And then the woes continue for Genç Lerbirli. That's sort of sad to see, but they've got to figure something out, or they're just going to kind of find themselves at the bottom of the table for a while.
There was some heads rolling at Genç Lerbirli. We'll talk more about that when we get to the news. But let's get off Saturday's matches, and we'll go on to Sunday's matches. Gaziantepspor and Konyaspor draw 3-3. Trabzonspor and Sivasspor draw 0-0. Kayseri Erciyesspor loses at home to Fenerbahce 2-1. And Antalyaspor at home beats Akhisar Belediyespor 1-0. I did see the highlights of the Gaziantepspor-Konyaspor match. Konyaspor coming back from a 3-1 deficit to level the score in Gaziantep. Cenk Tosun and two goals from Abdo Traore in that match for Gaziantepspor. Theofanis Gekas, Recep Aydın, and Hasan Kabze scoring the goals for Konyaspor there. For Antalyaspor and Akhisar Belediyespor, the only goal there was scored by Gökçek Vedersin in the 23rd minute. Antalyaspor getting the third straight win. Tita would have a penalty saved by Akhisar goalkeeper Oğuz Dağlaroğlu in the 53rd minute. And, you know, we've talked about Akhisar Belediyespor. Their road woes continue. They have only mustered a draw in week six. That was their only point that they've received on the road. And if we talk about the Trabzonspor-Sivasspor match, Mustafa Yumlu getting a direct red card in the 67th minute after an elbow to the face of Sivasspor's Ziyar Erdal. And that just seemed like a direct red card. I mean, I was reminded, before we started recording, we were discussing this. It reminded me of the Brazil-USA match in the 94 World Cup, and I remember Leonardo elbowing a U.S. player in the face, and you know, I showed you the replay of that over YouTube. And when we get to the Kayseri Erciyesspor Fenerbahce match, I mean, there were two controversial non-calls in the game, as Kader Mangani went studs up to Musso's thigh in the fifth minute and wasn't called there, and Fenerbahce posted on their official Instagram account of the scars that So suffered, and then Jenner Erkin was kicking Yasin Öztekin on the ground after Öztekin got tangled with Emre Belözoğlu. Many were saying that this should have been a card, and Erkin was actually taken off 2 minutes before halftime, replaced by Michael Kadlec, making his league debut in a Fenerbahce uniform. Now, with the Erciyesspor Fenerbahce match, Musa Sow and Emmanuel Emenike scoring the goals for Fenerbahce there. And Randall Ezofefa, I guess this is another candidate for goal of the week, off a free kick in the 22nd minute. Now, that match had 5 minutes of stoppage time played when four was shown to be added. But before we get to that match, I did want to discuss a little bit about the Trabzonspor-Sivasspor match. Trabzonspor, what are we up to in terms of their league shutout streak? I think you said it was, what, 452? I think that was the number?
Yeah, that's the approximate number of regular time league minutes that they've gone without conceding a goal. It's basically five games worth. Akhisar Belediyespor in week three was the last team to score against Trabzon in a 3-0 win for Akhisar, and they got their third goal that match, like right at the end of the game. So it's been five straight matches. Granted, that some of the teams haven't been too tough in that lineup, but that lineup did also include Fenerbahce, of course, recently. So it's shutting out all the teams you play is nice, but the last couple of games, Trabzonspor hasn't been able to score themselves. You know, so we can't really have that if you're a Trabzonspor fan.
Right, because like you were saying, I think I wrote this down, it was back-to-back 0-0 draws for Trabzonspor. And like you were saying, it's nice that they're shutting out the opponents, but it would kind of help if they scored themselves.
That's true. And you know, Mustafa Yumlu with that red card in the 62nd probably ruined that for them. I mean, I think Trabzonspor can handle Sivasspor at home, and they just... they couldn't just find the goal themselves. Obviously, if you focus a little bit more on defense, you're going to have fewer opportunities for your strikers in many cases. And I think that Trabzonspor just needs to kind of find their goal scoring form, which they've had. Although they're just this season, they're just not a very high scoring club. But it's definitely exciting to see how long this scoreless or shutout streak, I should say, goes for them. Usually we're sort of distracted by fancy looking goals, but in this case it's sort of like, how long can Ona Kvarak kind of keep this one going is something fun to watch out for. Konyaspor, Gaziantepspor in the 3-3, lots of excitement there. This was actually the first time that Konyaspor didn't lose on the road. So they finally got a point from a road game. And speaking of that whole topic, you were saying Akhisar Belediye has lost all their games on the road. It's even worse than that. They've never even scored a road goal. So they're 1-0 loss to Antalyaspor. They... I don't think that scoreline really surprised anyone, but of course it's good stuff from Antalyaspor, who were basically holding down the bottom of the table for a while, and suddenly they're at the middle of the table after just going on sort of a three-game win streak after not winning at all. So definitely there's some weird things going on in the league lately.
Right, and if we transition to the Erciyesspor Fenerbahce match, one of the things that people were going on about, other than the Caner Erkin kicking of Yasin Öztekin, and I remember watching it when he was being taken out. He had this look on his face, like, what, really, me? Like, and he got really angry about it. But I think the coach Ersun Yanal probably thought, I think he's losing his cool. I better get him out of here before he does something really dumb. But the one thing that everybody was talking about was the stoppage time, where 5 minutes were played and four was shown on that board. The fourth official raises up at the 90th minute. Now, Marcus Merck of League TV's Marathon postgame show, he made a mention of that being the minimum amount of time that was going to be added. Because if anybody saw this match, there was a lot of lying down from Kayserispor. There was, players just lying down, or at least one player was lying down. Stoppage time substitutions annoy me. I mean, in any game, they just annoy me, because it seems as though that's a blatant time-wasting tactic. But, Fenerbahce scoring the goal via Emmanuel Emenike right at the death, really. I mean, he was left unmarked, and he put his header right into the goal, and he gets his first goal in a Fenerbahce uniform. But, in terms of the whole stoppage time thing, when we get to the Bursaspor-Kayserispor match, it kind of puts this to shame in terms of the amount of stoppage time played. Because even though, you see the 4 minutes getting raised, that's not an absolute. The referee can add as much time as he wants, because still the official time is kept with the referee. And when you saw the time-wasting tactics from Kayseri Erciyesspor, who wanted the draw, it didn't quite work out for them. And, people were going ballistic about it. But, when we get to the Bursaspor-Kayserispor match, I think that, that kind of puts that a little bit off for naught in terms of that argument.
Yeah, you say you're annoyed by, all the time wasting and substitutions and things that happen in stoppage time. I mean, I think everyone's sort of annoyed by that. The thing that also annoys me, though, is when people complain about the amount of stoppage time. Because, consider if Emenike hadn't scored in that extra time, no one would really care. I mean, it's not... it just reminds me of the whole thing with Sir Alex Ferguson and Fergie time.
Right.
And how he would complain, vehemently about too much stoppage time being given in matches where that was a disadvantage, and had nothing to say when it was to his advantage. I mean, unnaturally and obviously. There's some truth to it. I mean, there was a study I heard about that showed that, stoppage time is more generally favorable toward the home team. One of the ways you can measure sort of home field advantage or home field bias or whatever in referees. But I mean, that aside, to me, that seems kind of lame. I mean, the amount of stoppage time is so insignificant compared to the rest of the game. And like you said, the referee does keep the official time. I don't know why some people seem to forget that or get really frustrated with it at the sort of exhibition game they had in Indianapolis between Chelsea and Inter Milan. I remember at halftime and at full time, right at the end of normal time, the announcer came on. He says, please remember, the referee keeps the official time. And at the time, I was thinking, no crap, right?
To tell us something we don't know.
I know. We were all all the people near me were joking around, please remember, players are not allowed to use their hands. 40-something thousand people showed up to that game, most of them wearing Chelsea jerseys. We know the rules, you know what I mean? But that was my sentiment at the time. But I mean, it seems like obviously if you have bias toward one team or another, and stoppage time sort of ends up screwing you in a game like this one or in the Bursaspor match, when we get to that, I can see how that's frustrating. But like, there's no real argument from my perspective.
All right. So we'll get to Monday's results now. Bursaspor beats Kayserispor 2-0 at home, and Beşiktaş draws Rizespor 0-0. For the Beşiktaş-Rizespor match, this is the first of four home matches that Beşiktaş has to play behind closed doors, which means women and children were allowed in this game. And this was played at the Atatürk Olympic Stadium, and not that many people showed up. There was approximately 3,000 fans there. A couple notes from the game. This is the final game of Beşiktaş manager Slaven Bilic's suspension. And Thomas Seabock actually suffered an injury during warm-ups and was replaced by Ersan Gülüm for this match. But I did want to get to the Bursaspor-Kayserispor match because, well, the Beşiktaş-Rizespor match, there really wasn't much to write home about except the fact that, you know, ever since Özhan Özyurt, who got injured, Beşiktaş, I think, have only won one game out of the four that he's missed. So, but the Bursaspor-Kayserispor match, I mean, both goals for Bursaspor scored by Pablo Bataya and Enes Ünal was scored in the stoppage time of the second half. And, you know, a total of 9 minutes was played there. You know, Clayton got a direct red card. Abdullah Durak got his second yellow card in stoppage time. And, you know, Kayser goalkeeper Ertuğrul Taşkırak also got a yellow in stoppage time. And, you know, it's not looking good for Kayserispor either. I mean, we were talking about Gençlerbirliği a little bit earlier and how much they suck. Well, Kayserispor isn't exactly doing that great either. But, you know, with that, I think that for the first goal, for Bataya's goal, you know, there was a Kayserispor player down in the penalty area, and, you know, they kept playing. You know, the referee never really whistled to, like, get the injured player off the field. But, you know, Bataya scoring there, and, of course, we talked about Enes Ünal a few weeks ago when he was the youngest player ever to score in the Turkish Super League, thereby making at least me feel my age, at least. But the whole thing with that is, you know, a total of 9 minutes was added, and I think that Ünal's goal was scored almost at the death, you know, right at the tail end of that stoppage time that the referee added. So it kind of makes the whole argument with the whole Ergiasspor Fenerbahçe match, you know, a kind of a moot point. So, I mean, I watched that match and, you know, Enes Ünal with a basic tap in, you know, Pablo Bataya, like, you know, we praised him a bunch on this podcast. So really, I mean, the amount of time added there, you know, kind of makes the Ergiasspor Fenerbahçe stoppage time controversy, you know, the whole Fergie time thing, makes it into a moot point.
Well, I sort of think it's moot to begin with. And keep in mind, I mean, like, referees, especially in Turkey, make a lot of mistakes. And we've seen some hideous red cards given out for absolutely no reason. You know, we've seen so much worse. If a referee, let's say, mistakenly adds an extra minute onto the game, that's, to me, is like the least offensive possible mistake an official can make. You know, it's the cards and the offside calls that are false or not given, or, you know, goals discounted that shouldn't be. Pick the battles, I say, and a little extra stoppage time here and there. It's entertainment. At least we get to see more of a game. I mean, I realize that view is not very popular with, say, the likes of people, you know, rooting for Kayserispor or rooting for Kayser Ergiasspor this week. But, you know, of all the things to complain about, the refereeing is bad, but it's not because too much stoppage time is being given out. I guess we'll watch for this mistake now, right? Like, if this weekend there are more issues, then that'll be a story. Don't get me wrong, but I don't know. I don't want to talk about that anymore.
All right.
But I will say this. You know, Bursaspor, it was a strange win for them, but it was their first win at home this late in the season. You know, eight games in, they finally get a home win for the fans, which was really important for them. They're sort of in that bottom third of the table, and where 3 points really kind of boosts you quite a bunch. And then to Beşiktaş's credit, you know, it's the first time that Rizespor have been shut out this season. So they were able to hold Rizespor scoreless. I'm sure they were hoping for a win there, but Rizespor, like you guys were saying last week, you know, they're very good. And they're at the top of the table, and they're a team to contend with. So kudos to Beşiktaş.
All right, then.
Çarşı, her şey karşı.
Yeah. All right. Then let's get to the standings then after eight games. Fenerbahce leads the league with 19 points. Beşiktaş in second with 16 points. Kasımpaşa in third with 15. Two teams with 14 points, Rizespor and Trabzonspor with 14. Rizespor in fourth due to goal difference. They have a plus four, and Trabzonspor has a zero. Galatasaray has 13 points. Three other teams also have 13 points. Eskişehirspor, Akhisar Belediyespor, and Sivasspor all have 13 points. And if we look at the bottom of the table, both Kayseri teams are in the relegation zone. Erciyesspor and Kayserispor are 16th and 17th respectively with 6 and 5 points there. And Gençlerbirliği right at the bottom with 4 points, only 1 win and 1 draw to their credit. And yeah, Gençlerbirliği, yeah, they pretty much are terrible at this point. And I said earlier heads were going to roll, and they did roll, and we'll talk more about that in our next segment of the podcast. But looking at the standings, what strikes out at you?
I think we've mentioned most of it, but I guess the thing that really stands out for me is sort of how close it is at the bottom of the table. You know, you mentioned how badly Gençlerbirliği is doing. You know, a win this weekend and they would be out of the relegation zone. I mean, it's like, you know, 3 points can kind of really lift you. It's a closer table than what we've seen in recent seasons, at least 8 weeks in. So I think that's kind of more exciting, more entertaining. Obviously, the city of Kayseri, it's just not happening for them right now. Clearly, like you say, with both their teams in the relegation zone. But hey, if they both get relegated, then the rivalry can kind of stay alive in the first league. But it's a bit early in the season to be talking about that. I guess it's kind of time for some of those teams to start thinking about making some adjustments. And still no official word on Galatasaray Beşiktaş results. So a lot of the tables you see on the internet still show them only having played 7 matches. I think that frustration will continue for a while
Well, I will tell you this. I will mention it in the next segment, but we do have a decision on that.
Do we? Oh, I checked it earlier today. I didn't see anything.
Okay. Yeah, but yeah, right. We did get a decision on that. I'll mention it in the next segment. Let's heighten the tension here.
Oh,
okay.
Awesome.
But right. Let's move on to the week 9 schedule. We'll start off with Friday, the 25th of October. We'll see Sivasspor at home against Kayseri Erciyesspor and Fenerbahce hosting Gaziantepspor. Saturday's matches will feature Karabükspor hosting Antalyaspor, Elazığspor hosting Gençlerbirliği, and Akhisar Belediyespor hosting Beşiktaş. Sunday's matches will feature Eskişehirspor at home against Rizespor, Konyaspor hosting Bursaspor, and Kayserispor hosting Galatasaray. And the only match on Monday will see Kasımpaşa hosting Trabzonspor. So we were talking about it before the podcast, and I think you were looking forward to the Akhisar Belediyespor Beşiktaş match more than anything. You know, maybe the Elazığspor Gençlerbirliği match, maybe we could keep an eye out on that, considering that Elazığspor is in 15th with 7 points. And, you know, if Gençlerbirliği should win that match, and, you know, considering who their new coach is, you know, that should be interesting to see there. But, you know, Elazığspor kind of have to win that one, because I think Sontrolyan, their manager, is kind of on the hot seat right now with Elazığspor. You know, Elazığspor really haven't impressed lately. You know, obviously 1 point above the relegation zone, but we're about a quarter into the season, so I think the term early days really doesn't apply anymore. So this is where we kind of get into the grind of the middle of the season. But you know, anything else that kind of stands out to you other than the match we had mentioned before we started recording?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is kind of all about Saturday. You also mentioned Elazığspor Gençlerbirliği. You know, Karabükspor Antalyaspor, I think, is pretty interesting because, you know, Antalyaspor is on that 3-game win streak. They're really doing well. But then you've got Karabükspor, who concede very, very few goals at home. In fact, they're tied with Trabzonspor as being the best in the league in that department, having only conceded 1 goal in their 4 home games so far this season. So it'll be interesting to see sort of if one of those streaks or both of them get, you know, busted up potentially. So I think that'll be interesting to see. I mean, yeah, Akhisar and Beşiktaş to me is obviously going to be one of the most exciting, simply because Akhisar Belediyespor is the best performing home team in the league, and Beşiktaş is the best performing road team in the league. So you know, I have a feeling it's going to be one of those battles that just ends in a scoreless draw. But I'm hoping for more than that. I think both these teams are sort of relatively very comfortable in this position. So I think that'll be a good one. At least I hope it is. You know, it's, yeah, I think I'll hopefully be able to catch more of the games this weekend than I did last weekend. But, you know, these days, I mean, like, if you look at the results from last weekend, I mean, some of the most exciting stuff was in games you wouldn't have predicted. You know, for example, the Antep and Konyaspor game, 3-3, that was, you know, a thriller. But we probably wouldn't have predicted that one. So go out and watch them all.
Right. I think I'll contribute the Kasımpaşa Trabzonspor match on Monday. You know, just a top of the table clash. You know, Kasımpaşa right now, you know, they're pretty close to the top of the table. And then Trabzonspor, you know, they're creeping up there. And, you know, their European adventure, you know, they did happen to get a win. A little bit of a spoiler there. But that should be interesting to see if Trabzonspor can climb up the table or can Kasımpaşa, you know, maintain that form that we've been seeing from them over the last few weeks.
Definitely. And then of course, you know, Eskişehir Rizespor, you know, should I think will also be interesting because, you know, Rizespor, they've had a lot of success, but they've also played a lot of really weak teams. Their record against teams in the top half of the table, they're 16th in the league when playing the top half of the table, and Eskişehir Spor is in sixth. So Rizespor, it seems like when they're challenged by a really good team that they don't really, you know, pull through. But I think that'll be a good one to see. And of course, can Fenerbahce continue their success against Gaziantepspor? I think most people would say yes, but this league is full of surprises. So,
all right, so we'll end this segment of this week's Turkish Football Weekly. Coming up, we'll have some news, a little bit of preview of that. Heads did roll at Gençlerbirliği, and we do have some sad news to report in terms of 1461 Trabzon, and we will be talking about the European adventures of Galatasaray and Trabzonspor. So stay tuned. And welcome back to Turkish Football Weekly. A little bit of news going around the Turkish football world. You can rejoice now, and we can definitely rejoice, because the Turkish Football Federation has announced the result of the Beşiktaş Galatasaray derby from week 5, which we talked about at length when it happened, abandoned due to the pitch invasion. It's been awarded a 3-0 forfeit win to Galatasaray. So that ends that.
Right, which Galatasaray had effectively won 2-1, right? So, you know, getting the forfeit result gives them a little bit of better goal difference, which is enough to boost them another 3 places in the table just on just on goal differential. So an even bigger win for Galatasaray than what it would have been, you know, if everybody had just kind of sat in their seats and watched that game finish out without incident. But I just thought it was funny that, you know, when I updated my table with a 3-0 instead of the 2-1, like suddenly Galatasaray is like just jumped a few spots the table.
I'm just wondering what took them so long.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, well. All right, let's keep along with the news then. Kasımpaşa have released Hüseyin Kala from his contract after he was arrested following allegations of assaulting a Syrian woman refugee in Istanbul. Gençlerbirliği have sacked manager Metin Diyadin and general manager Cem Unuk from their positions. Replacing Diyadin is former Antalyaspor manager Mehmet Özdilek, who has agreed to a contract reportedly expiring after the 2014-2015 season. Kayserispor have postponed their extraordinary congress, which was supposed to have been held on October 23rd to October 30th. This is due to not meeting the quorum needed to hold a chairman election. Beşiktaş midfielder Necip Uysal will be out for at least 2 weeks after suffering a first-degree hamstring strain. Trabzonspor's Mustafa Yumlu, who we talked about in the last segment, his elbow to Sivasspor's Ziya Erdal, he has been suspended for the next 3 matches. Digiturk, the current broadcaster of the Super League in Turkey, have announced that they have signed a new contract to broadcast the league through 2017. Their current contract was set to expire after this season. And some sad news out of Trabzon. 1461 Trabzon manager Kadir Özcan has died after a heart attack. He was 61 years old. Özcan had previously played for Trabzonspor from 1972 to 1978, helping them to promotion and then to three league titles during his time playing for the club. So some sad news there. Kadir Özcan dying, the 1461 Trabzon manager. Played for Trabzonspor back in the day, and a lot of condolences from various teams. So, just a little bit of some sad news. But I think one thing I wanted to talk about was the sacking of manager Metin Diyadin. Now, Gençler Birliği has only had one win and one draw to their credit this season. We talked about how Gençler Birliği is really, really bad. But, you know, what I noticed about Diyadin is this. I mean, he got Orduspor promoted a few years ago, and then he never made it to the end of the first half of the following season. You know, obviously Hector Cooper came in. And then he got Kasımpaşa, promoted from the PTT First Division. But he got sacked, you know, a few weeks into that season. So it just seems to be like whenever Diyadin gets to the Super League, it just seems as though he's kind of out of his depth. And obviously, you know, Diyadin did have some history with Gençler Birliği. You know, he did play for the club previously as a player, but it just seems to me as though, like, somehow the Super League seems way too out of his depth. And, you know, while it's great that he gets teams promoted, and, well, Gençler Birliği didn't need promotion, obviously, Chav hired him because of his previous history with Gençler Birliği. You know, I've heard a lot of things about, you know, he's really this no-nonsense coach and things like that, but I don't really see it. It just seems as though that for some weird reason, Diyadin can't translate his success in the lower league to the top flight football.
Yeah, it's one of those things where can Gençler Birliği do too much worse at this point? It seems like any adjustment is going to be a good one, but I don't know. It's sort of hard to say. Let's put it this way.
It can't get any worse.
Yeah, exactly. And really to kind of get the emotion of some of the fans, you got to read the Round Ball and Ankara blog at ankarafootball.blogspot.com and sort of talking about Oz Kanka, you know, wrote this whole article just basically saying just how terrible their game against Kasımpaşa was and how much flack that Cem Onuk was getting after the game, you know, especially about that second half and so forth. So it doesn't seem to be any bit of a surprise, the timing, or the action. But it's like, okay, you know, who else was really out there right now who could replace him, you know?
Yeah, well, Mehmet Özdilek comes in as their new manager, and you know, he did okay with Antalyaspor. I mean, he's kept Antalyaspor up in the five seasons he was there, so you know, it's not a bad choice. And it just seems to me as though that, you know, firing Fuat Çapa was a huge mistake, and you know, even not signing Bjorn Flemix to a contract was pretty much one of the factors that I think kind of contributed to Gençler Birliği's season. Because you know, Gençler Birliği is the type of club that is more of a selling club. And, you know, İlhan Çavçav, you know, you never hear about the club not paying their players on time. You know, it's still one of the few clubs that possibly could actually turn a profit. You know, they're not listed on the stock exchange, so we don't know the exact numbers. But my deal with Çavçav is, you know, he's pretty cheap, but at least he runs it so that Gençler Birliği doesn't have a problem with money. The problem is, you know, he just seems to sell his best players, or the club seems to sell its best players, you know, for a profit. But, you know, it's just that, you know, they always waddle around mid-table, and, you know, everybody goes about on how Aziz Yıldırım should resign. Well, I would kind of contribute to the argument that maybe Çavçav should resign, because he's been there for way longer. I think he's been there since the 80s. You know, I guess he's getting kind of demented or something, because if you look at him these days, he's, you know, he's showing his age. But, you know, back to Gençler Birliği, you know, Mehmet Özdilek, not a bad choice. I mean, you know, he's kept Antalyaspor. Okay, so they may be a mid-level team. You know, maybe they've escaped relegation. But considering the other options out there, I think this was a very good choice for Genscher Birli.
Yeah, they didn't have a lot of choices. And, you know, on the one hand, at least they didn't wait around for things to get better, because it just doesn't look like that was about to happen, although hopefully things do turn around for them now. But you're right, usually they're sort of a middle of the table team, and their fans seem to be generally okay with that, because at least they keep hope alive. But there's nothing you can do if you get relegated or you're fighting relegation all season. That's not really a fun feeling. So hopefully things turn around for them. They do get to play, you know, a very struggling Elazığspor this Saturday, so you know, that could be the start of better things to come for them.
Interesting. Well, if we've got nothing else to say about the news, do you want to just go ahead and go on to the European matches for Galatasaray and Trabzonspor then?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, so we'll start off with the Champions League. Galatasaray beating FC Copenhagen at home 3-1. All the Galatasaray goals came in the first half, as Felipe Melo in the 10th minute, Wesley Sneijder in the 38th minute, and Didier Drogba in the first minute of stoppage time in the first half scored there. The only consolation goal for FC Copenhagen was scored through Claudemir in the 88th minute, so Galatasaray is now second in the group with 4 points. And I caught the first half right after Felipe Melo scored his goal, and I remember what you were saying about FC Copenhagen, because obviously you follow the Danish league more than I do. It's one of the other leagues you passionately follow, and I remember all the things you were saying about FC Copenhagen. And while Galatasaray had a terrific first half, I just kept thinking about what you were saying about Copenhagen. I'm thinking, okay, is Galatasaray really that good? Or is FC Copenhagen playing that badly? I mean, do they really deserve to be at this level, you know, at this point? Because we saw them draw against Juventus at home in Parken Stadium, and it just hasn't been going well for them. But for Galatasaray, it just seemed as though that this game was really more of a gimme 3 points for them, considering, you know, what you've been saying about FC Copenhagen. Because I was looking up the table for the Danish league during that game, and I didn't watch the second half because I thought, yeah, okay, this is over, you know, obviously considering what you've been talking about with FC Copenhagen. So I was thinking it's probably over, and I looked up their record, and they have a record of 4-4-4. So while Galatasaray, yes, I mean, it was a good win for them, it just seemed to me that it came off as, well, you were right about FC Copenhagen. I mean, considering their previous successes, and it's just not looking too good for them this season, especially when you see that they lost their first three games to start the season. So 3 points for Galatasaray, but maybe we'll have to see what happens at Parken Stadium in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, I think you're right there. You know, the thing to remember, the Danish league is super tight right now. And when I was talking about how bad Copenhagen was, it was when their, you know, most of their four wins have come in recent weeks. I mean, they were looking really terrible, you know, a month ago in terms of their record and position in the standings. And they also sacked their coach back at the end of August. So they've started with this new guy, Norwegian fellow, and I think he made a comment, you know, after the game, basically saying something to the effect that, well, you know, Copenhagen, we're still sort of getting our mentality together as a team and learning how to work together. I mean, I was shocked when they actually pulled off a draw against Juventus, even though it was in Copenhagen, but I would give Galatasaray probably more credit in this case than you would. Yeah, Copenhagen clearly weren't a threat in this game. Their consolation goal kind of, the way it was set up was sort of lucky. It kind of bounced off a bunch of knees and shins, and it looked pretty cool, actually, but it wasn't the kind of goal that you work for or plan for. But no, to Galatasaray's credit, they came out in this game like full throttle, and they were pressing really high. They were getting a lot of the possession, a lot of the balls going across the goal, and that was, it looked as though they were going for that desperate goal kind of at the end of a game. And then even after they went up 1-0 early, they were still pressing just as hard for that second goal. And then you'd kind of see Copenhagen try to do the same thing, try to match their style, and they could do it for a little bit and then just lose possession. And, you know, Copenhagen did have a bunch of, like, corner kick opportunities in the first half, but none of them came to fruition. I thought maybe if they got a goal back, it would be from a corner, but that wasn't to be for them. So Galatasaray just... They came out. It was fun to watch because they just played as though they were just going for a bunch of goals, and they really, you know, it,
they were
for me,
they were basically playing like they were men on a mission.
Exactly, and you know, it wasn't that kind of oh well, let's play defense for a while, wear them out, you know, score a goal, keep possession. It wasn't one of those kinds of slow games. This was you know, Mancini must have just told them, I want you to run out there and just give it everything and just try to score a ton of goals. And going into the locker room at halftime up 3-0 is ideal. I mean,
they could basically really go on cruise control for the second half.
Well, exactly. And you know, regardless of how intentional it was, you know, Mancini and Galatasaray, they played this game really well, and they called the right shots. I mean, the only criticism you can say about Galatasaray is that Copenhagen really sucked. But, you know, the key will be in the next game in a couple of weeks, you know, when they play again, but in Copenhagen, will we see a similar sort of strategy? And I think in those sort of road games, that getting that early away goal can be really huge. So I'm really looking forward to seeing sort of the second leg of this of this matchup, if you will. Of course, now Galatasaray's standings in the group indicate that if they do dispose of Copenhagen like they did in this game, in the next game, then they will guarantee themselves to remain in European competition. At least they cannot lose the group, that is to say, if they can afford a win in Copenhagen. So, you know, I thought this was a really entertaining game, despite the fact that, you know, it was pretty obvious who the better team was, and really looking forward to seeing them play again.
Right.
You want to tell us the standings of the group?
Yeah, but just before that, you know, my basis of my criticism of Copenhagen was basically what you said. You know, Copenhagen, yeah, they got their couple wins in the last few weeks, but, you know, they're kind of in a transition too. So, I mean, it was basically two teams in transition, but like you said, Galatasaray came out like men on a mission and practically took care of business in the first half, and they went on cruise control for the second half. And, you know, I didn't watch the second half because I thought, you know, considering what you said, I thought, yeah, I don't think Copenhagen belongs on this level, all things considering.
Right, and then of course, Juventus lost their game to Real Madrid, so you've got kind of a nice situation now with Juventus and Copenhagen haven't won a game yet, you know, three games into this group play. So, you know, Galatasaray needs to take care of Copenhagen. If they do, then maybe with a little luck, it won't come down to that last match of the group, you know, between Galatasaray and Juventus, as we kind of predicted weeks ago that game would, you know, might be sort of the clincher for Galatasaray. It's starting to look like they might actually, or they could actually finish second in this group and proceed on to the next round, to the knockout phase, if they keep this up.
Right, and like you said, if they take care of business in Copenhagen and Parken Stadium, well, then they're guaranteed not to finish last in the group, and it's just a matter of whether they advance to the knockout rounds of the Champions League or drop down to the knockout rounds of the Europa League. But they still play European football.
Exactly.
All right, then, so let's move on to the Europa League as Trabzonspor beats Legia Warsaw 2-0. Mark Janko and Oljan Adin scoring the goals for Trabzonspor there in the 7th and 82nd minutes, respectively. And Trabzonspor now tops their group with 7 points. And, you know, I didn't get the opportunity to see this game, but it just sounded like it was mostly ho-hum from Trabzonspor. I mean, that's really all I got to say about that. You know, Mark Janko, I had heard, you know, when he initially got transferred, he's kind of like an Andy Carroll type character. You know, you really need to have someone feed him the balls. You know, he's kind of like in the box striker. You know, he cleans up the mess and things like that. So he scores a goal here, the Austrian does. And Oljan Adin, you know, he clinches the win for Trabzonspor. And we'll have to see what happens, but Trabzonspor now topping the group with 7 points.
Yeah, and it's another situation sort of like Gullet's tries, where if they can afford to win their next match, then they'll really be in the driver's seat and looking very good. It's kind of nice to have some good news for a change about Turkish clubs in Europe. You know, both our teams left, you know, seem to be holding their own in the group stages of their respective competitions. But Warsaw's the team sort of that everyone else in the group's been beating up on. They haven't even scored a goal in the group stages. Three matches in, so they're not really a threat. But Lazio and Apollon Limassol from Cyprus did us all a favor by getting into a draw as well, so kind of minimizing their point accumulation. Trabzonspor, like you said, with the 7 points and then 5 points and 4 points to Lazio and Apollon. So looking good. This is a situation where you got to finish in the top two of the group in order to advance, and the bottom two are done for. So looking good so far. Mathematically, there's still time to screw it up, but it doesn't seem like Trabzonspor is really prone to that right now. Interesting to see them get a shutout victory, because that's all, you know, we've seen them shutting everybody out in the league lately. So that was kind of a nice thing to see too. But I'm trying to look up who they're playing next. They play Warsaw again, but this time in Warsaw. So that'll be in 2 weeks. So hopefully, you know, they can get the same job done. I think they can, because like I say, Legia Warsaw hasn't even scored a goal yet. So
yeah. Yep.
Definitely try to collect the 3 points there, right?
Yep, they'll have to try and collect the 3 points there. And, you know, like I said, Warsaw hasn't even scored a goal yet, so it just seems as though they're the whipping boys. So we'll see what happens with that match in Warsaw. And that's going to do it for this week's edition of Turkish Football Weekly. Any final thoughts before we bump on out of here?
No, not really. I mean, you know, I guess keep an eye on Galatasaray and Trabzonspor to see if all their European success carries over to the league, I say. And that's kind of what I'll be watching for. Not too much else needs to be said. I think definitely hats off to Kadir Özcan, you know, the 1461 Trabzon manager you mentioned. Definitely a legend there. Nice to see some comments from, you know, like you said, from a lot of the other teams in the league paying their respects to him. So 1461 weren't having the best season this year like they did last season, but hopefully things pick up for them in their spirits as well as their performance.
All right, so thank you for listening to Turkish Football Weekly for this week. Jeremy, thank you again for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Enjoyed it as always.
And we will see you all next time.